another episode of Shadow Talk, an information security and cyber threat intelligence podcast brought to you by Digital Shadows, a ReliaQuest company. I'm joined by my colleagues, Ivan and Stefano. How are you guys doing today? And can you believe it is almost October already?
Yeah, time is flying by. I'm doing great here in the office with Stefano. For the first time, I actually got to see him in person. He usually is all the way there in Italy, but now he's visiting us here in Dallas, so it's nice.
Yeah, it's good to be here again. Nice to be in the office, seeing you guys in person. And yeah, I can't believe it's almost October because I will be on PTO the first week of October. So I've been looking for this month quite a lot lately. And yeah, so glad it's here. Glad it's here.
I'm glad it's here because I love Halloween and I'm ready for spooky season. But in terms of vulnerability news this week, there is a new remote code execution vulnerability impacting the Sophos firewalls, and it is being actively exploited in the wild. The vulnerability is tracked as CVE-2022-3236. Also, the IRS is warning that they are seeing a rise in SMS phishing attacks or smishing attacks, however you want to call it, from threat actors masquerading as the IRS in hopes of stealing sensitive information. Within these attacks, victims are redirected to a fraudulent landing page that looks, you know, it's built to look like the IRS page or similar page that's used to collect information. So it's good practice, just never click on links that are texted to you, especially if you're not expecting them. It's really highly unlikely that the IRS is going to send you a text message, especially an unexpected text message. Snail mail is usually the name of the game when it comes to the IRS, but there is also a lot of snail mail phishing. That's still a thing. So if you're unsure, always reach out to the company in question with a trusted communication method, such as a phone number from their official website, not the contact information provided by a suspicious text message or even a snail mail letter. So the first topic this week is on something that we actually discussed last week on the podcast, which is the leaked Lockbit ransomware builder. So to recap, disgruntled developer working with the gang leaked the builder on Twitter, tagging some Twitter pages that they knew that would get a lot of visibility. It did. And last week, Stefano and I predicted that it would only be a matter of time before cyber criminals launch attacks with this builder. So less than a week later, here we are. There are reports that a fairly new ransomware group, but not brand new, which is tracked as the Bloody Ransomware Gang, has carried out several attacks using an encryptor that was created from the Lockbit builder that was leaked. Stefano, are you surprised that this happened so quickly?
Well, not surprised, because like that's sort of in line of what we talked about last week. And from like an intelligence analyst point of view, it's always good to see when you make a sort of a forecast the week before and then stuff similar to what you predicted happens in the wild. On the other hand, it's not nice that people are actually using this builder to conduct malicious activity, of course. But yeah, it was to be expected, I think. And this is just going to be like the first of a long series of ransomware attacks conducted via this builder.
Yeah, I have to say that I was a little bit surprised just how quickly it happened. But Lockbit is one of the most active and it is a really good ransomware above a lot of other ones. They, you know, brag about all the different types of features and whatnot on their page. But so it's not surprising anyone would use it, but I guess with like the Babook and other ones, like there was an extended period of time before we saw any type of reporting. So Ivan, could you give us a brief rundown on this new group, the Bloody Ransomware Gang, their TTPs, and if they use single or double extortion?
Sure. So the Bloody Ransomware Gang, they are a gang that they have been active since about May of 2022, and they have previously targeted a lot of medical and dental offices in New York. And they do practice double extortion, but they do not have a data leakage website. Instead, what they do is that they use Telegram to extort victims once they steal the data. And one interesting thing about the group is that while they do consider themselves a ransomware group, they do not develop ransomware. Instead, what they do is that they use a lot of these leaked builders and source code of ransomware groups like Conti, Babook, and now Lockbit to conduct their attacks.
I guess that's another good way to fly under the radar of like researchers and stuff too, if you're using Telegram versus like the traditional Tor data leak site. So in the past campaigns, the group has appended the extension .bloody, which is most likely, I'm assuming, where their name came from. And this was appended to encrypted files. However, the Lockbit builder that was leaked did not leave a lot of room for customization. Ivan, what extension is being used with the Lockbit encryptor? And have they customized the ransom note, or is it still like the generic Lockbit one that's being used in these attacks?
Yeah, so, you know, the interesting thing is that the Lockbit builder, it doesn't allow for custom file extensions whenever they are encrypting data. So in this campaign, the extension was a combination of numbers, uppercase and lowercase letters, and it was about 9 characters long. But it's always going to be different. So every time they run the builder, it makes a different file extension. The ransom note was modified by Bloody to include their own information, although it was still written in the same style and format as Lockbit. So they customized everything they could, and they were able to do it very quickly, as you know, this builder was just released a few days ago. And we will highly likely see other threat actors finding ways to continue customizing this builder to fit their needs and their campaigns, like Stefano was talking about. This is probably a trend that's going to become very popular in the future, given the popularity of Lockbit.
For the extension, so it doesn't look like you can do any type of attribution with just the extension alone, but it looks like the ransom note does offer you some type of differentiation between that Lockbit gang and this new group, which is super useful because it would be really confusing if someone was using the builder and then just used everything the exact same as Lockbit, but I guess they would have to kind of change the information, otherwise they would then contact Lockbit. So another topic this week, also on ransomware, there have been a lot of blogs based around our ransomware groups moving away from encryption and towards destruction. So researchers discovered there's a recent sample of malware that's very similar to the Xmatter exfiltration tool. And that tool is used to stage and exfiltrate data and then get it ready for encryption. This recent sample was used in an AlphaV or Black Hat ransomware attack this one was designed to stage the data for destruction after exfiltration instead of encryption. So after they remove the data, it's then staged to be destroyed. Stefano, why do you think they're doing this? Why destroy data instead of encrypting it? Like, why is it benefiting them?
Well, I think that destroying data is likely to be faster than encrypting it and then store it somewhere else, like uploading like on a dark web forums. We know that the connection, like the internet connection speed, is not the best on most of those platforms. So like from a point of view of just like the speed to conduct these attacks, it makes sense to do that. But then I think there are significant drawbacks, to be fair, that will not allow this practice to become that widespread as much as like the double encryption or just like the encryption practices that we've seen in the past. First of all, because the damage cost to the victim is going to be exponentially higher, and the cost to recover from an attack of this magnitude and impact is going to be really, really high for organization. And therefore, and after that also, because like, you know, well, in ransomware attacks, the ransom is paid occasionally by victims to recover that data. But if that data has been destroyed, well, there isn't much to pay for. We've seen in the past variations of this. So we've seen the ransom being paid not only to recover the data, but also to avoid having it published like on the dark web forum, in the famous double extortion method. We've seen other variations of these when ransomware groups adopted just exfiltration and not encryption of data before asking a ransom. So ransomware will definitely change and evolve over the years, and cybercrime has been doing that for a long time. And that's the way they keep adapting to a changing environment. That's how they keep their business going. However, I think like in the long run, destroying victims' data is not going to be like a successful and reliable business practice from their point of view. And yeah, for that reason, I don't think we're going to see a huge amount of adoption of this tactic in the wild.
Yeah, I've seen a lot of times where, you know, data is returned after ransom is paid or anything like that, and the data is either corrupted or, like you said, already destroyed and unable to use it. So this could become the next evolution of ransomware operations, could not be. But many times, organizations do not have backups, or they are not properly air-gapped and such, so that they end up encrypted, or their backups are old. And so there's still a bunch of data that they need that they don't have that gets encrypted. So in this case, Steph, what are your thoughts here? Do you have any prevention tips for network defenders?
Yeah, I think like in order to defend against the ransomware threat, there's got to be like a stressed effort on both prevention and mitigation. In terms of prevention, we talked about this in the past several times, but yeah, it's important to like increase endpoint security, conduct security awareness training for your employees, because we've seen a lot of ransomware get initial access via phishing campaigns, for example, or various social engineering techniques. It's also really important to keep track of your digital assets and conduct like routine vulnerability management practices, because that's another open door for a lot of cyber criminals, both ransomware actors, but every other kind as well. Also, when we talk about ransomware groups and how they get access into victims' organization, we need to take into account the threat posed by initial access brokers. And based on what we see every day, remote desktop protocol, virtual private networks, like all this public facing stuff is a key entry point for attackers. So, and also like using CTI services to keep up to date your threat model, like being aware of what groups are conducting these kind of attacks, which sectors and geographies they're prioritizing. All these practices really can improve the security posture of an organization and prevent attacks. And also there's the point of view of mitigation. So it's important to keep backup updated, which I know it's maybe painful for organizations because it's time consuming and resource consuming, but it's really important. And also backup that data, update that backup regularly, because otherwise if you have backed it up but it was like months ago, it's not really useful, because like you want every of your sensitive data secure. So I guess these are the main tips that I would give. But also I just wanted to add one other point, like based on what we were saying before about data destruction against data encryption. I also think that, you know, when ransomware groups do not offer their victims the data back in a proper and secure way, their reputation is incredibly damaged. And in a way, although they're criminals, and I know it's weird talking about trust and reputation with criminals, but it's also like a really important component of how they conduct business. Because if, you know, if a ransomware group is known for destroying data or like not being trustworthy when they get a ransom, no one is going to pay that anymore, like at a cost of risking losing their data. So that's another important aspect that I wanted to mention.
I agree. And I think this new potential trend will impact the reputation of whichever group that uses it. And I do want to note also the research that I read, it did not look like this is something that the AlphaV group is using with all attacks. It looks like something that they may have been experimenting with. So we haven't seen it widespread yet, but just wanted to put it on the radar. Getting on to our next topic, researchers are seeing an increase in domain shadowing. And this is something I recently learned about. I've seen it before in the past, but I haven't actually had a name for it. But it's not a new technique. It's been around for ages. There's lots of exploit kits that use this, that are known for creating these. However, there's been an uptick in activity, specifically for phishing sites. So domain shadowing, what it is, it's when a threat actor acquires credentials that are used to maintain a legitimate domain or like a DNS provider, like to set up your DNS. Once they gain access to this, they can set up malicious subdomains that are linked to the legit domain or the root domain. They do not always need access to the web server, and often the subdomains are hosted in a different location than the main domain, so it can be tricky to detect. There was one case that I read about where 16 domains were compromised to create 649 malicious subdomains. And this activity is concerning because not only is it hard to detect, but it's also concerning because it means that hundreds of phishing domains are piggybacking off legitimate domains that are in good standing. So it'll be also hard to detect if one of these phishing URLs or, you know, domains are used against your organization. It would be harder for your email security and things like that to be able to filter it. So what do you guys think about this?
I think it's a very concerning threat that all these legitimate domains are being used in. They can be used for, you know, C2 servers or to host malicious pages. becomes a whole lot more difficult to detect, and that it can allow threat actors to basically host an infinite amount of subdomains from these compromised websites. At the end of the day, the responsibility of protecting against these types of attacks comes from the domain owners, but users, they should also be cautious of suspicious subdomains that they don't recognize, even if they are using a legitimate website.
I also think like it's a pretty clever technique from their point of view, because it goes on to exploit the sort of human characteristics rather than vulnerability, like based on trust and like routine activities. Because like if you go to a trusted website and everything looks fine, and maybe you've done your homework and you've checked if the URL is the correct one, you've checked if the domain is the usual one, and then you just browse to the website and you can click on stuff that seems legitimate, and you happen to be like on malicious subdomains, like it's one of those things where it's also really difficult to learn about, like from a security awareness point of view, because like even if you're aware about this threat, if you're on a legitimate trusted website, you still keep clicking on like, you know, the contact page or the blog page or whatever. So it's a clever technique from their point of view, and definitely like one to look out for.
Yeah, most cases of domain shadowing go undetected until complaints roll in from third parties regarding the malicious activity, or people start saying that their website has like a negative reputation. Reports that I read said that it's again very difficult to detect, and most methods leverage machine learning to analyze loads of data from a variety of sources, including DNS logs. And I'm going to provide a link to a guide that I found in this week's show notes that dives into the detection in further detail, and it does utilize machine learning. However, I wanted to ask you guys, what are some things organizations can do to prevent this type of attack?
Yeah, I think some of the usual account takeover mitigation applies. So yeah, please keep using strong passwords, because I know you're already using them. You're not using password one as your main password for all of your accounts. But yeah, if you are, just change it. So use strong passwords. I always recommend using a good password manager, because the human brain does not work in that way. So like we can't remember like a long string of capital letters, numbers, and symbols. So use a password manager, because that helps a lot. At least it helps me. Try to apply multi-factor authentication to all of your accounts, or at least the most important ones. If you can't be bothered to, you know, use this sort of security measures to your account on, you know, a cooking forum that you're just going to use once, it's fine. But please, for the important ones, make sure to use it. And also like keep up with your passwords. Keep up with what's happening there. Regularly check if there have been breaches involving your email address, because that can happen a lot. So have I been pwned is your greatest ally in there. And yeah, just usual stuff. Anything else to add, Ivan?
No, you covered it pretty well. The only additional thing I'd say is that make sure that you are scanning your domains for any subdomains that appear suspicious. And of course, ensure that you have protections in place against the DNS type of attacks as usual. But yeah, I think you covered it pretty well.
Thank you, guys. Those are some good tips. So that is all we have this week on Shadow Talk. We have a lot of great blogs that came out this week and also from last week if you didn't get a chance to check out those. So navigate over to our blog at digitalshadows.com, and we will see you next time.